Welcome to Music Mastery Academy, where we talk about all things music.
From practicing and support for parents, to theory and music history, to navigating the ups and downs of the dynamic world of music.
We hope that these conversations are an encouragement to you as you navigate your own journey.
So Jennifer, what are we talking about today?
So today we're going to be talking about performance anxiety.
Performance anxiety.
This is something that I personally have a lot of experience with. I think probably most of us do to one extent or another.
Yes. So. Yeah, I'm thinking about it now. Like, why do we have performance anxiety and why is it so common? And I think it goes back to our evolutionary biology. You know, we wanted to make sure that we were accepted by a group. It's the same reason adolescents in school will probably worry a lot about what they're wearing and being accepted into a group. It's a very psychologically and evolutionary sound instinct, I would say. So, right. You know, there's some pros and cons to this, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. So, I'm just going to share a little bit about my personal journey with performance anxiety. And I think, I mean, some people are just very nervous performers right from day one when they're very young. I don't feel like I was ever nervous performing until I had something go wrong in a performance. And the first time that happened, I was also, I feel like, at a very vulnerable age. I was probably, you know, kind of preteen age, 11, 12 years old, and all of a sudden I had this, you know, this recital I was giving and this massive memory slip, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And it ended up being, I mean, I was able to finish, but it ended up being not great. We'll just put it that way. It was, you know, I spent a lot of time wandering around, restarting, trying to, you know, figure out my way through it. I didn't know that I had a teacher or myself that knew how to prepare for that sort of a situation. Also, sometimes it's hard as a teacher because if you have a student who's traditionally a very solid performer, you don't necessarily want to psych them out by saying, well, this is what you do if this happens, you know? And sometimes teachers will wait until you have an experience like that before they're like, oh, we need to address this, which I don't think that's the right thing to do. But sometimes that's the justification there. And anyway, after this happened, it was so hard for me to face that. It was like a traumatic experience. It was like every time I performed, instead of being able to get into the music, I would remember this like awful experience of not being able to get through this piece in a way that felt comfortable to me. And I know for me, my personal performance anxiety, I tend to be a naturally very anxious person anyway. So I think when you're already prone to anxiety, when
you're a good musician,
throw performing in there, it's like, I don't know, it makes it that much more difficult because you're already prone to kind of overthinking or, you know, thinking too much about things or, you know, going through the what ifs in your mind. And that makes it very, very difficult. And I remember, you know, one of my worst experiences with performance anxiety, my senior recital in college, you know, this recital, it's about an hour in length, it's fully memorized, and it determines if you're going to graduate as a music major or not.
Yes.
You know, so it's not a low pressure thing.
No pressure.
There's definitely some high stakes there. It's not like you're just getting to perform for loving family and friends. You're performing for a jury of faculty. You're being critiqued and rated on how you do. And they're going to determine, did you pass or did you not pass? And I remember I got through about two pieces into my program and I walked off stage and I was like, I'm not coming back. I was like, I can't finish. I was about 20 minutes in and I couldn't get over the like horrible, like anxiety and this feeling of, but what if I fail?
Right.
And I couldn't, I couldn't get that, you know, out of my head. And my husband comes backstage and he's like, what's going on? You know, it's been a while, you know, we're waiting for you. And finally my teacher comes back and he couldn't even tell I was nervous. He was like, you're doing great. Like, what's the problem? You know? And he kind of talked me off the ledge and encouraged me and gave me what I needed to be able to go back out there and finish.
Wow.
Which I did. And I was successful. Things weren't perfect, but it was, you know, successful. But I remember walking off stage and just saying to myself, I'm never doing that again.
Oh my gosh.
I'm never doing that again. I can't put myself through that level of extreme stress and anxiety again. I can't do it. And that kind of, for me, I always knew I went to school not because I wanted to be a concert pianist so much as I wanted to have the tools in my toolbox to be a better teacher. It was always my goal to be, you know, a very fine music teacher. That's what I wanted. And so I took comfort in that, like, oh, I don't have to put myself through that again. I can perform with music in smaller scale settings without that level of pressure and not feel like I'm, you know, going to be destroyed by this anxiety anymore. But yeah, that's, I mean, and I have more stories to share of how I've dealt with this now since that time.
Yes.
But I remember just that overwhelming sense of what if I fail?
Right.
And not being able to, like, you know, move forward, that feeling of being completely frozen. So
I love the way you're approaching this topic by letting that feeling be valid and kind of telling the relatability of it, like showing how relatable this is without giving a quick solution at first, because we have to acknowledge that it's a real thing and that it can be debilitating and that it's a very real challenge for people that does not disqualify them from beautiful musical experiences in the future. But it is something that is, it's a beast that, you know, many of us have to overcome. And so, yes, that's something that I would like to talk about too. My experiences mainly have to do with having a lot of opportunities to stand up and perform and be in charge of a lot of things growing up. I was one of the older members of a 70 plus cousin community where I grew up, and I loved it. A lot of opportunities for leadership. My parents and my uncles and aunts had me put on these big parties where I would invite hundreds of people from school to my house and have to entertain them. And this was separated from my musical performances, but it kind of all went in the same. I had multiple experiences that kind of gave me a lot of exposure. However, I will say that it was more than just doing it a lot of times that really helped me, or helps me to this day. It is a paradigm shift for a couple of things. And I got used to relying on humor, kind of something gets a little bit, to kind of dissipate that anxiety, whether it's imposter syndrome of even publishing something online, like I've been doing for a few months. That was a huge step in bravery for me because, you know, growing up as a performance major through school, I have a bachelor's and master's in flute performance. And there was a lot of situations where there was a lot of high stakes auditions for competitions or internal through the school for leadership positions that we had the opportunity to do. And also presentations in the form of actual recitals and in an oral exam where you had to basically show that you were a master of all things music when you most certainly don't always feel that way with how vast the topic is. And so I found a way to kind of lighten the mood in some form or fashion by understanding that I am only human and that the people who are listening to me are also only human, and also completely embracing not just the knowledge, but a visceral trust that everyone that is watching you wants you to succeed.
Right.
And absolutely, they are getting so much enjoyment from being there watching you. Dwelling on that part of it has helped a lot. But I will say it does take a journey to get there. You're like, why am I put into this position where I'm suddenly relating to, you know, zebras on the Serengeti running away from a lion? You know, this like intense period of large stress and this huge recovery doesn't seem healthy sometimes, but being able to get to the point later where not only can you withstand a performance that you need to do for the greater good of someone else usually, but that you can coach students through that is a very, very noble thing to be, right, arrive to be able to do. I will say that any of you who are in a position where you will either be able to mentor someone in the music currently or in the future, that this topic and this experience is going to bless you and them for a long time. It is such a gift to be able to talk about this openly without judgment.
Right.
So
one of the things that I think is hard for a lot of people and a lot of musicians is when we are performing, and it doesn't matter, I wouldn't say if you're a musician, when you're performing, period, when you're putting yourself on the spot, it's like the ultimate level of vulnerability.
It is.
You are like putting your whole self out there, and especially as a musician, you're putting your whole self out there completely open to judgment, mm-hmm, from your audience.
Yep.
And of course, your audience almost always,
yes,
is going to be, like you said,
yes,
a supportive person, but that still is like this very highly uncomfortable place yes. that we put ourselves in as humans.
That's
so
true.
I mean, it's so healthy in some ways, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
it can feel so incredibly massively uncomfortable. And I remember one performance that I was asked very, very quickly to sub in for a pianist who had the flu for a little chamber group that was going to be accompanying a choir at Abravanel Hall. And Abravanel Hall is the big concert hall here in Utah. And I was asked the morning of to come and sub in for the performance that evening and with one rehearsal. And I was like, well, fortunately the music was very easy.
Yes.
I was like, let me see the music before
yes.
I commit to
yeah.
But I have to say, this is one performance where I felt zero anxiety. And I have since analyzed this, like asked myself, what was so different about this and why did it feel so different than other performances that I've had? And the first thing was that it was very last minute. So there wasn't this opportunity
build
to
up.
Like, right. There was no build up. There wasn't this opportunity to sit there and overthink it.
Yes.
Was like, all I could focus on was learning the music and being together with this group. It takes your full self and your full mind to like run in and sub in on a job like that. You're not like, you don't have the opportunity to do anything other than focus on what you're doing. Does
That's
that make
amazing.
Sense? And so there was that, but then also I was just thinking to myself, what a gift it is to perform in this beautiful concert hall for all these people.
Yes.
It's just this wonderful feeling of gratitude that I had for this experience that I was going to get to have, that normally I don't approach my performances with this idea of, I'm so grateful to perform today. You know, that's not usually.
What a
that.
Great way to think though.
Right. I mean,
that seems to be.
It was such a neat experience to be able to have that performance where I was able to experience performing with no anxiety, to then be able to model performances after that, say, okay,
right.
How can I apply those themes? Like, how can I stay focused and in the moment? How can I, you know, have gratitude? How can I, you know, appreciate the fact that not only am I, you know, grateful for this opportunity, but I'm having this opportunity to serve somebody else by stepping in, you
I
know?
I love it. I love that. I wanted to say more about that focus outward. That is
yes.
probably the best thing that I could say for any principle for anything. When your focus is outside of yourself and on the person that you're giving to, it all makes sense. It does. You are so much more forgiving of your mistakes because you see the mistakes as so much more realistic and forgivable than you do if the focus was on ourselves. And so I think one thing I was reading about in terms of building confidence, or what is it that builds confidence in anyone? What is the idea of confidence and how do you arrive there? What is it? And I think it starts really young when you have a platform to be able to make mistakes and to recover from them, that people will be patient enough with you for your mistakes. You have this trust that you can do things that are hard and that it doesn't have to be perfect, that mistakes are okay. Many people grow up with a worldview that is not, you know, true to their experience, which is a shame, but there are ways to arrive there. Finding a way to communicate to yourself that mistakes are not an enemy.
Right.
It's a clue for information. That's all it is. It's information for the future. It's useful information. Mistakes are useful information.
And just reminding yourself, I mean, I have a tab on my phone, a folder, an album folder of professional musicians who've messed up.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Live performances, you know, and I have one of Kristen Chenoweth, and this was love Kristen Chenoweth.
I love
incredible.
Her. She's amazing.
But she was giving a performance outdoors in Park City, Deer Valley Resort. And this was shortly, I think this was the first, if I remember right, this was the first performance, live performance she had done since the pandemic.
Oh,
so you can imagine, like, she's a little out of practice.
Yes.
And not only that, incredibly emotional. It was a beautiful evening. She shared,
yes.
you know, she was very emotional and emotions very close to the surface, but she was singing popular, which, you know, she's mm-hmm. sung
yes,
for years.
Whole, yeah.
For years.
Big part of her career.
And I happened to turn on my phone to record her singing popular. It's an outdoor concert, you know, it's fine. And right when I turn on my phone, she forgets her words.
Wow.
And she just is singing like, la, la, la. And then she laughs about it afterwards.
Oh,
you know, she makes
yes,
humor.
You have
you know,
to.
Yeah. But I was so grateful that I had captured that on camera because I was like, I'm showing every single student
yes, this
because
the show,
we need to know
the story, yeah.
that professional musicians make mistakes.
Yes.
We all make mistakes. That is such a normal part of being human. And it's the way that we are able to deal with them and move forward that kind of shows who we are as musicians and
beautiful.
As people. So, and I loved how she just, you know, made a joke about it afterwards. So.
You know, and I think about how significant that is in today's world as compared to what it might be 100 years ago. There were live performances have been around for a very long time and is a big part of our any society's culture. But I mean, even in our American culture, when we only had live performances or some TV, but it wasn't to the same degree that we can experience performance or entertainment on our phones, our devices, and the level of edits that
right.
is possible
yes.
and almost expected to do in order to qualify as good enough to publish. And I have problems with that. I have issues with that for sure, because it's not that I don't enjoy the art of post-processing creation. That's a whole art in and of itself. But when we're getting too tied up in refining it even after the fact, we are becoming less forgiving and less less fond of our humanity.
Right.
I think making mistakes and recovering for them is just as much, if not more so, a feat to be admired by an audience.
Right.
You know, kind of like, I don't know if you ever read the book Ender's Game, but it was this novel experience in the performance that in the performance or in the objective, or I mean, even pretending that it was a game, but like it was all novel. And that was what was shown was it's basically the equivalent of sight reading for a performance all
right.
the time with curveballs or whatever. And there was all kinds of depth about that story too, that we don't need to go into now, but I wanted to talk about, in my teaching, I have an experience with a really wonderful student that teaches me so much. This student is an adult student who offers me a lot of insight to the grand scheme of pedagogy. And I just really am blessed by that opportunity. And with most of my students, I mean, even just me being a music teacher with the semi pedigree that I have or whatever, it's intimidating enough for whatever reason that students will feel nervous to play for me as their teacher. And I'm trying to be as real and, you know, forgiving as I can.
Oh, it happens to me too. I have students
yes.
taking lessons for
yes.
3 years. And they're still like, nervous to play
like,
for
why
me.
Why are
I'm
you?
Like,
I'm not
me,
scary. I promise.
Yeah.
I will, even if you just like miss everything, I'll be so happy that you did it. Like
right,
I'm not.
Right, that you showed up.
Yes.
You know,
but the level of excellence, I think it's just that perspective. And so
yeah.
now what I'm trying to do with these students is I try to come back, and this comes to a tangible music theory principle, but I say we have to go back to the basics and only care about the rhythm. The beat is the only thing that you must get right. I don't care if you play a bunch of flub in the middle. I don't care if it's a completely different song. I want the beat to land on a beat, to be sure that there's some sort of communication of beat. And I don't care about the notes. And we're going to do that 3 times. And it was amazing that sometimes when I do that, everything fell into place. Like all the notes were right. And I wasn't even trying to get that. That wasn't the objective at all. But putting the pressure, taking the pressure off of, you can't make mistakes to, I only have to reach this bar, this pretty easy bar to qualify as pass or to qualify as getting it right. I basically articulate my standard as a teacher to where the expectation is really much lower than even theirs.
Right.
And sometimes people need that spelled out to them where you really, in the grand scheme of things, it's a real gift to even have an opportunity to take a music lesson or to be in this country or to be where you are in the family that you are or in whatever benefits you have in your life. The gratitude principle comes back. We cannot focus on that until sometimes we're reminded to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this kind of ties into one thing that I wanted to talk about with how I've been dealing with performance anxiety with my daughter, who really struggles and always
has.
I mean, she for a very long time wouldn't even perform. She's
yeah.
one of those that kind of was born with performance anxiety,
yes.
I guess you could say.
Yes, 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 yes.
Like she just wouldn't even perform at all. Now she does perform, but she will have waves where it feels incredibly overwhelming to her. And lately, as she's been prepping for a big performance that she has coming up, we've been talking about just being normal.
Yeah.
Just being normal. Like that there's no expectation to be anything other than normal. And
right.
we're not talking about being your best because that's
no,
pressure.
That is pressure.
And
yes.
As soon as you start to tell a child, oh, we just try your best. They're like, well, what is my best?
Yes.
You know,
I could have done better, but
right,
this could
exactly.
be better. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
exactly. It becomes pressure.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
And those words are pressure to her. You say, try your best to her and she feels pressure like instantly. And so we talk about just being normal. Mm-hmm. What does normal look like?
Yeah.
Normal looks like I'm just being relaxed. And yeah. I'm just playing through my piece. I'm just, you know, it's just a normal day. And maybe I make a mistake. Making mistakes is normal. That's normal.
It is
like
normal.
This is what normal looks like. And so the goal isn't try your best. The goal is just be normal.
Right.
That's it. And it has been amazing to me to see how much we've been doing this for like 2 weeks now, where every single time she starts to feel stressed, I'm like, you just be normal.
Interesting.
How much this is helping her to control that feeling of panic, where it just takes the pressure down, just like you were saying, it just takes that level of pressure down where they don't feel like they have to meet this like impossible standard that somebody has. They just have to give what they can give. And that's good enough.
It is good enough. And I want to point out this difference, because I know there's going to be many musicians who might disagree in the sense that where is that strive for excellence? There's so much value in reaching for your potential. I am here to say that those two things can be married. They can exist in the same context.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, I will say that one is a prerequisite to the other. I will say that taking away that overthinking, perfectionism that plagues so much of us, especially in the context of, I will say it, social media, you know, it just does.
Right.
To undo that is more of an important work for music teachers or for anyone than it used to be. And it has to happen first before you can reach and even start to stretch. Musicians, music has the ability to give us this growing experience, immense growing experience. And that I don't want to take that away. It is something that can help us evolve into artists. You know, it really does help us connect and also to grow. That growth, that pushing and struggling and evolving from that. I believe in all of that. I really do. But it is not. That is not able. You're not able to harvest anything from that until you first address this bigger picture of really what's the most important. It's not that stretching yourself and growing and striving for absolute excellence and trying to get it all right is not valuable. It is just not the most valuable thing. So yeah. I'm not trying to be here to say, because that's the biggest argument that I can imagine being said to this is, well, I want, you know, for me choosing a music teacher or me choosing for myself, I want a teacher who's going to really push me. I want a teacher who's going to, have really high expectations, and I want to be able to, I don't want some fluff that's not going to really, that's just going to be all fuzzy and not, and just be happy with anything that I do. There's a difference between being happy with who you are as a person and inviting you to stretch. There's differences. It's not less than as a teacher to have a gentle demeanor towards your mental health than it is for someone to ignore that and just focus on the results. So those are two.
And like everything, this is very person to person. And as a teacher, I think one of the most important things to know instinctively is which of my students tend towards perfectionism and towards anxiety. And when you know these students going in, like, okay, these are my kids that are going to tend towards this, you know, which of my students are just kind of like laissez-faire, I don't care.
Yes, that's
like,
true.
Whatever, we're all good. I mean, and we all have students like that.
Yes.
Who are like, they are fine. Like standing up on stage and just with whatever product comes out, they're good. They're like, they don't need the be normal talk.
Yes, they don't need the be normal talk.
They are not the ones that need it. They maybe need a little bit of, you know, a little bit of goals. Or
you can do better.
Right, exactly.
You can try more.
I think it's so important, though, for us to know that these kids who tend towards anxiety and perfectionism are working hard.
They are working hard.
They are already
putting in the effort.
And
they want to do their best so bad.
And our job actually is to moderate their perfectionism and their anxiety.
It's true.
Not to add to it. So.
I will say, too, another thing about that, and this is going to introduce some topics that we'll go into more later, but the way that you moderate perfectionism and performance anxiety says a lot about you as a mentor. In terms of you don't need to pretend that something is perfect when it's not. You don't need to be dishonest about their performances. You just need to let them know that they are good enough. They are enough.
Yes.
But this doesn't mean that you're trying to help them. Maybe let's say, for example, submit an audition recording for something. If that student is of the perfectionistic performance anxiety, high anxiety type, you don't need to take away the opportunity for them to grow okay with their humanity by covering up their mistakes. I don't think that helps them either. I think just an overall acceptance of that is, this is all, you are enough.
Right.
You are enough. And it doesn't matter how long it takes for you to journey through this, whatever principle we're working on.
Well, and I think that's what all of us need as humans. We need that message constantly from everyone in our lives that we are enough.
Yes.
The way that we are. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people who talk about this in parenting or in other things, I think exactly what you said, then people are in the background saying, well, you know, you're not going to learn or grow anything from that.
Yeah, that's not even the issue.
As humans are very good at knowing our own faults.
Yes.
And the things that we need to work on. And as teachers, we can approach those situations very delicately, you know.
And you can still talk about that. Yeah. It's not like you have to ignore them.
You absolutely can.
Yeah.
But you don't have to layer on the pressure.
No. So. You can be honest as a mentor with love and kindness and honesty. You don't have to pretend it's not there. You don't have to even walk on eggshells. But you do need to communicate what the most important thing is. And that will reduce pressure.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not... Because there's high anxiety teaching too. Like, oh no, I'm going to say something that makes them so stressed out. Right. And they're going to write me a bad review, you know, or anything like that. It's really just an overall acceptance of our own humanity. And I am so passionate about this topic. And I have lots to say in other podcasts about this. And I want to write about it. And I'm just so interested in just relearning how to accept and love mistake-making humans.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because that's always who we have been. Yeah. As we have never not been that way. And to pretend that we're something that we're not does so many horrifying things to our mental health. Well, I really appreciate this opportunity to sit here and talk and explore topics like this. And it's really encouraging to think that there might be people who might benefit from this as well. So thank you so much for listening in, and stay tuned for more conversations relating to the ups and downs of the music world.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. See you next time.